Yeah, now that's what some of the articles I was reading was saying, that it's not just a price hike, but they're going to try to crack down on password sharing too. So,
yeah, they saw Netflix was making a buck on that, because everybody who lost their access kind of signed up on their own. So now they want to follow suit. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the podcast. This week we're talking trash about Disney's price hike that's incoming, but today our main topic is going to be telemarketers that is on HBO Max right now, and we're going to talk about a couple other things in between. Scott got the smile on his face. He's going to go hard on the writer's strike, and we're going to complain about streaming pricing. Maybe we'll switch back to cable. What's going on, guys?
Cable sounds enticing at this moment now.
I know.
I must say I never switched away, so I don't have to do the switch. I'm already unswitched.
You got the double feature. So you got the cable package at $199 per month, and then what do you pay for this? What do you pay for the streaming?
I don't even pay $199 for the cable. So
there's just too much. There's too much out there right now. There's just too many services. Like, I didn't even realize MGM had their own thing called MGM Plus.
Yeah, Scott brought that up a couple weeks ago on a few episodes back.
Yeah. I was watching, I don't remember what I was watching this weekend or last week, but like the MGM Plus logo popped up on it. And I guess they got bought out by someone else, because whatever I was watching, I think it might have been on Amazon Prime.
Amazon bought them.
Everything I was watching, like a couple things I was watching, all had that MGM Plus logo. So like, what's going on?
It used to be called Epix, and they
changed. Oh, is that what happened?
Yes. And then they made it MGM Plus. So anything was in Epix is now MGM Plus.
Yeah, Epix was cool. So, but that's not enough. You know, that wasn't enough to get people to sign up for just that. So,
No. I remember Epix was like, do you want HBO? Yes. Do you want Showtime? Yes. You want Epix for like another 2 cents? You're like, all right, fine. Let me get that Epix.
Sneak that Epix in there. Make it Epix.
You got two extra pennies. But I feel like a lot of these, like, you know, small players need to just get dissolved into bigger streaming thing. Just so everyone's paying a lot now, and even more with these price hikes, they should be getting more for what they're paying. So I think some of these bigger streaming platforms should acquire these smaller ones.
I read or heard that may start happening, because there's so many different choices out there that you might see some consolidation with these bigger companies just taking on, you know, these kind of like MGM Plus. Maybe that will just merge into Amazon Prime or be like a different tier of the subscription. But yeah, I did hear that is probably going to happen, just because it's crazy right now. If someone's like, hey, did you see the show on like this whatever app, and you're like, I didn't. So it just disconnects people, I think, more than anything.
Yeah, you gotta have like a million apps now on whatever player you're using. It's just getting to the point where it's annoying. And then there's more and more of these free TV/movie sites or apps. You know, I mean, they're generating money through commercials. But there's more and more popping up, like the newest one that was getting advertised a lot last week that I saw was Xumo Play. Xumo Play is the new one. It's like another like Tubi, like Crackle or whatever all these free things are now.
It comes down to where the value is of where the most amount of content that one likes and where they stay, because there's people who just stay in Netflix, or they stay in Hulu, or they just stay in Amazon Prime, and they don't venture off into any other apps. Because I have the latest breakdown that if you were to subscribe to Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime Video, Disney Plus, Max, Peacock, Paramount Plus, and Apple TV Plus, it will come out to be a monthly of $87.43 if you subscribe to all of the new costs, no ad subscriptions.
Yeah, but nobody's doing that. There's like three on there that you can immediately drop off. Like, no one's getting all of that. I would say, I think you named like six or seven. I would say people probably have three or four. Maybe I think Netflix, Hulu is still pretty good price. I think a lot of people just have Amazon because you have the Amazon subscription already, so you just get the video package as part of that.
So I named eight. So what in talks possibly happened that Disney may combine Hulu and Disney Plus and put them together since they're already packaged? So you may not pay for both of them. They'll just maybe either come just Disney Plus and they'll just get rid of Hulu. And right now that there's Max, but one I didn't mention, that there's also Discovery Plus. So there's been a Warner Media decided they didn't want to combine them. So they're still making some material in Max and combining it into Disney Discovery. So there's all these clashes as far as what content there is and what you want to put your money.
I think there's going to be like three main ones that everyone subscribes to. And I think we're going to see a lot more ad models where you just sort of like watch some commercials. I think Netflix will probably do that. And I think Disney will probably do that as well. I actually don't mind the ad. That's the version of Hulu that I have. And I've always had that because Hulu has always, since the beginning, it's been a commercial break type model. It was only later that they adopted a commercial free one. So I've just been used to that. But I also don't mind like a quick break, just to like go to the bathroom, get another glass of water, or just get a snack instead of pausing it. Because when I pause it, I feel like I'm like stopping time, you know? But if it's a natural break, I feel like, okay, this, I'll make use of that time instead. It's psychologically, it's like a little different for me. But I welcome that. Plus you save money. I don't care if I watch the same, you know, Kia commercial three times in a row.
Watching TV shows, I don't mind it. But when I'm watching movies, it does get a little annoying.
That's a problem. Yeah.
For something for like Hulu, it's okay. But like if it's just Netflix where you just have, where like you just have Netflix for movies or HBO for movies, that I would have to pay a little more.
Does Hulu do that on its movies? I don't think so, right?
I don't know. I've just always had the ad free.
I think more often they put ads at TV shows than in movies. I haven't really watched that many movies on Hulu with the ad version, but I know that mostly guaranteed they're going to put ads in.
I think Hulu, their ad model for movies, I think when I watched The Jewel Thief, they have about 60 seconds of ads up front before the movie starts, and then there's no more interruptions. I think that's what they do.
Now, Paramount's been doing a lot of combining and consolidating because there used to be CBS All Access, which they made Paramount Plus, and now Showtime is now part of Paramount Plus. So you used to subscribe to Showtime. If you weren't a cable subscriber, you would have to subscribe directly to Showtime, and now Paramount Plus are all together. So that whole collection of Showtime shows and CBS or any other Paramount movies are all together. So that
it makes sense because like nobody's trying to subscribe to Showtime. No disrespect to Billions or Dexter or Yellow Jacket, but like it's not I don't think it's a strong enough app to be a standalone app. Maybe you can do Paramount Plus plus another $2 to get Showtime content, but Showtime is not, I just don't feel like it has the same level of customer loyalty that or brand recognition that an HBO might have, or but it does have good stuff.
Yeah, that works. Neither of those two are like big enough or popular enough to have people subscribe to them on their own. But it's like combine both of them and you get more.
You might get some. Maybe I'll rewatch Dexter season one.
Like that's a good strategy for like smaller streaming services like that.
What may happen is having a consolidation of having a marketplace where you can manage all these subscriptions, because that's pretty much what cable TV was. You would subscribe to all these providers and you didn't even know they handled paying all of them separately. But what's happening as far as when you have Roku, they also, whether you know it or not, they're, you can subscribe directly on their platform and they're handling the subscriptions for you and then paying them separately. So you're not having to subscribe to each one individually. And the same thing happens with Amazon Prime. You could subscribe to any one of the third party providers directly on Amazon's platform, but you're still paying a la carte for each one, but you're able to go on one dashboard and maintain it from there. And that's, I can see that's where things are going, because it, for the average person, it's way too complicated to have to log into all these different accounts and have to remember what the logins are.
Yeah, they're called channels on Prime Video. They're called channels.
So that's each different app or service?
Yeah, you could add HBO, you could add, you know, Showtime, you could add, and they just call it channels. So they're different channels within the Prime Video app.
Apple does something similar, Apple TV, that is, not Apple TV Plus, but the actual Apple hardware has an app where once you subscribe to all of your apps, it creates like one sort of interface with just all of the shows, not even the apps. It bypasses the apps. It just brings all of the shows from each individual app into like a nice little menu.
See, that's even better. That's even better.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
The issue with that is the revenue share, because you can subscribe on your iPhone, you can subscribe to ZZ Plus or Hulu, but if you try to subscribe to Netflix, Netflix does not allow you to sign up for its service on the device because they don't want to have Apple take a revenue share from them in causing you to pay more. So you have to go onto Netflix website to create your credentials and subscribe and select your subscription plan. And then you can log into the app on Netflix, but you can't sign in or purchase a subscription due to the fact they don't want it. They want to make all the money and not have Apple take their share.
Yeah, but that's not a problem because that's a one-time thing. You do it once and you're pretty much logged in forever. Like, you don't, it's not really a hurdle.
No, it's just a work. It's just something you just have to have a computer for.
Yeah.
No website. Well, I do the website.
I'm always kind of like shuffling what apps I have and don't have. I recently canceled my Disney just because I wasn't really watching anything on there. I think they really scaled back the production of a lot of these Marvel shows. So when that last wave ended, I kind of checked out. I wasn't watching anything. And I'm still riding that 99 cent per month Peacock subscription that I got last Thanksgiving. Somebody sent me a link and that's still going. I might cancel it once that's gone. I don't know what the actual price is. And you know, HBO or Max is always something like I'm always going to have that. And then like one or two others. I think Hulu is good. It's a good buy at $8 a month.
The with ad version of Peacock is $5.99. But if you want it without ads, it's $11.99, which I don't really know if it's that worth it. You can pretty much just go into NBC. If you really want to watch NBC shows, it's a lot of money to watch them.
No, but they have a decent movie library, and they actually have a lot of new releases on there as well.
Peacock has been like this the past couple weeks in a row. They've been dropping some new release, and they've all been like really like, you know, like recent releases. Not like I was surprised because I've had the Peacock app for the longest, and I never go on it other than to watch WWE. It's rare they'll get like a good movie released like every like twice a year or something. But this past month or so, it's been like the last 4, 5, 6 weeks. It's been every week they've been dropping something new and good that I want to watch.
You can go watch The Northman on there. You can watch Tar. You can watch Asteroid City. You can watch Cocaine Bear. They also have the Premier League rights, which is huge. The way they incorporate soccer. They do it like if you start watching, you know, a game like midway through or just towards the end, they have like a highlight button. And if you just click the highlight button, it'll just cut to like highlight after highlight until you're caught up to real time. Really smart way to use just like TV technology, which hasn't really changed at all. You still just hit play and watch what you want. You have the fast forward rewind, but this is a really smart way to do live sports. So yeah,
yeah, Peacock is hot right now. There's, I guess you could, I guess that's an app that you can choose when you want to have it, which month you want it, and then just cancel for the rest. Like when the Premier League is going on, if you're into sports, you can have it then. You know, if like at a time like now when they're getting a lot of new release movies, now would be the time to get it for like a month, watch them, and then just cancel until they get good again.
Yeah, $5.99, that's a steal. I don't know. I had a Paramount deal a while back where I was getting it for free, but that expired. So I don't know what the cost is for Paramount, but they want to really
gotta wait till Black Friday, man. These 99-cent Black Friday deals.
Paramount's not cheap. It's $11.99 with no ads and about $6 with ads. So it's quite pricey.
That's a little greedy. They should do, you know, what Disney did for $5.99 a couple of years ago, or what they should just do what these Black Friday deals do, which is like get you subscribed, hopefully you forget about it, auto renews at $11.99, and you know, that's it.
Now the twist is that they have all this content in the can, but eventually they're going to run out, because now we still have the writer's strike and we have the SAG after strike, and production is not currently happening, and particularly for any that's going to be in production for cable or television, that is usually already in progress. But if they don't start that in the next month or two, that you're not going to get in there for the fall season, or the fall season usually doesn't start till late September, early October, which already as it is late. So you may not get until before Thanksgiving if anything doesn't get worked out in the next month or so, which it doesn't seem like there is, because there hasn't been any continued talk since the strike has happened, particularly for actors.
I heard the writers did hear that they were potentially having a meeting, but I never followed up on that. If not, we're all just going to have to watch foreign films and TV productions. That's it.
It's going to get interesting, because the longer the strike goes, you know, to see if people stop unsubscribing from a lot of these things, like if they just exhaust one platform and just watch everything on it, and there aren't any new releases like till the end of the year or something, if people start dropping off and unsubscribing, that's going to be interesting to see.
See, we're not able to test it yet or what's going to happen, because both Barbie and Oppenheimer both premiered just after the actors' strike started. So the actors were still able to go out and do their press tours, and the same thing for Barbie, and then all the media just kept on replaying it and all these interviews they already had to read. But anything else that's going to be released, the actors can't go out and do promotion for their films. So it's basically like they're going to throw these films out there and just promote them with the footage, with trailers, and then they just have to hope, the industry just has to hope for the best, that people are going to watch the trailers and build up this following without any additional promotion other than just the director going out there and shopping around to all the what's left talk shows, because the talk shows are not the primetime or evening talk shows are during the production, only the daytime. On the daytime links.
How are those two movies doing? Is one of those two like the highest grossing film of the year?
I think Super Mario is still number one, but I think Barbie's is getting up there. Oppenheimer is definitely top 10. It's doing well. They're both doing really well.
And if I remember correctly, I think those two and Avatar are the movies I've heard the most of being released in theaters this year. So
Avatar, I think, was last year.
Was it?
I think it was late last year, yeah. I think that was like...
I'm assuming one of these two or three movies has to be like the top grossing, because I don't remember hearing so much about other movies as much as these.
Scott, pull it up. I think it's Super Mario Brothers.
Super Mario Brothers has... it made a total gross of $574 million.
That's domestic.
And I just want to know U.S. I don't want to know.
Well, it says total gross is what I have. And then Barbie is second with $526 million, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse has 380 million. Then The Little Mermaid with 297 million, and Oppenheimer is 264.
Yeah, this has to be the best year for theaters since at least 2019, pre-pandemic.
Especially with Meg 2 about to drop.
I looked up, Top Gun was number one Maverick last year with 718 million.
Yeah, that movie crushed everything else.
And that's on Paramount Plus, FYI.
Yes, indeed. And then Avatar was, The Way of Water was 684 million. Then Black and a Panther, Wakanda Forever, was 453 million. So just those three movies themselves have anything that was released this year somewhat beat. So other than, you know, but Super Mario Brothers has a little bit more to catch up, and same thing with Barbie to catch up with last year with Top Gun.
Hopefully we can, you know, they figure out the strike. Actors and writers get what they deserve, and everybody gets sort of a good stream of shows and films coming down the pipeline again.
Gotta figure out that AI issue first. That's not easy.
It's not easy at
all.
That's
a tough one. I just had to throw that in there because if you know me, you know I'm anti-AI. So
are you?
I've watched too many sci-fi movies, guys. I know how this is gonna end.
Yes, like everything else. Are we talking to the real Pedro, or are we talking to the AI version?
You're talking a lawnmower man right now.
Oh my god.
Well, you should have introduced yourself. Nice to meet you, lawnmower man.
Let's pivot to some content that we actually watched recently. I want to start just because I was just watching an episode. A new season of How To with John Wilson premiered on HBO a couple of weeks ago, on Max a couple of weeks ago. I think he's three episodes in. That is a show that came out during the pandemic that I found was like the perfect pandemic remedy when we were just like stuck at home and everything was just like news all day. This weird show came out about this guy just like filming random things in New York City and just kind of telling weird stories through these visual metaphors that he came up with. The new season is still pretty good. He's actually in it in all the episodes, which he wasn't in any of the previous ones before. I wouldn't say it's as good as season one, especially the episode where he talks about scaffolding, or the one where it's called How to Improve Your Memory from season one. But that is always a good hang. How To with John Wilson on HBO.
Yeah, I checked out an episode or two of that show. I agree with what you said. It was like the perfect remedy. It's almost like a little poem in a 30-minute interval.
Yeah, exactly.
It's soothing. You know, it's soothing to see like someone who's like upbeat and has like a bright outlook on life in New York, where everything else is like so dim and grim.
And a lot of the imagery sometimes is too, is like, because the images are so random. But that's, you know, I think
it's very heartfelt. It reminds me of like holiday movies and shows back in the 90s.
It's also one of those shows that he probably couldn't do anywhere else, just because you don't have the same type of tapestry that you do in New York City and the availability of content that he has access to. It's a very New York show. Scott?
Yeah, I would say, for what you were saying, it's just like how Phil on the street, no, you would not be able to do a show where Phil was on the street going out to random people and you guarantee to get a very funny response. You couldn't do that really in any other city.
Phil on the street or Billy on the street?
Oh, excuse me. Bill, well, I forgot. You know what I
mean. Yeah. That's a Billy on the Street.
Billy on the Street, yes.
It's a good show for about 5 minutes, and then you need to turn it off, but you always come back.
Yes, it's more entertaining when there's a celebrity that's completely out of their comfort zone. So going up to random people.
What have you guys checked out recently.
I watched the movie Heart of Stone. I didn't really get through much of it. It's a Netflix movie with Gal Gadot, Jamie Dornan are more of the well-known people in it. And it starts off with just Gal Gadot is just on like this chase to try to beat her fellow investigative crew, to say it in layman's terms. And she's like a secret agent on top of the other operatives. And it's just, they're constantly on the move. What sort of gets me not interested in something if there's not enough time for them to introduce the character to just like, oh, this is a person who's going to be on the move the entire time. But not for me. Right now I can see on IMDb as a 5.7 rating, but it is pretty high in popularity, but it's just not for me.
I don't know how I feel about IMDb's rating yet. It seems to be all over the place. I haven't gotten a good read on that. So
they've fallen off hard, man. It used to be like their message board or their reviews were like, you'd get some really unique like perspectives on it and some really good stuff, but I don't know what happened.
Did everybody go to just start a YouTube channel?
I guess so, but it was years ago. It was like, it was awesome. It was great, especially all the indie movies pages, like their discussions.
How about this? On Rotten Tomatoes, it has on the tomato meter, it has a 29%, and the audience score is 57%. Is that a more...
Audience is higher than the critic score?
Yes.
Damn.
Not by a lot, though. That's almost like 57 to almost 30. So
it's universally not good. Okay.
Universally not
like when the universe sort of agrees on something.
There you go.
It's like when it... Sounds like it's one of those movies that'll autoplay after you finish a movie on Netflix.
Yeah. You know what I hate? I hate when you finish a movie on Netflix and it leaves you kind of like pensive and thinking about it, and immediately music comes on to tell you to watch something else, and then you just break from that experience.
They don't let you breathe after the, like...
No, they
right
don't.
When the credits come in, they zoom out of the credits and bring the other movies in and stuff like that.
Imagine you just watch The Lawnmower Man and you're like sitting with your thoughts as the credits roll, like trying to internalize what you just saw. You can't, because they're like, hey, watch something else. Okay, two things. You can't gain weight. Dude, getting big.
Yeah, my cat's fat, bro, but he's like 80% fur.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like,
that happens to my dog.
If I could fit my whole hand like in his fur.
He's like, excuse me, sir.
Yeah, he left.
For a second there, I didn't know what we were talking about. You're like, you getting big. And I'm like, what are we talking about? And then I saw the camera panning up Pedro of showing his cat.
What's cat's name?
My cat's name is Mookie.
Mookie?
Yeah.
Mookie the cat.
Wait, Mookie's a movie character from where?
I named him after a Mets player from the 1986 World Series, but
okay,
I'm sure it sounds like might be in like some 80s movie or something, like Short Circuit or something.
I know Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah, that was the man, bro.
Yes.
He was on NBA Jam.
Yeah. All right. Pedro, what have you watched?
I watched Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Since it premiered on Disney Plus. I was actually thinking of making this my first post-pandemic movie to go watch in movie theaters, because I was such a fan of the first two. But around the time I started to decide, it was already out for a few weeks by the time I decided to watch it, it premiered. And I'm glad I didn't watch it in the movie theaters. Because I... Not a fan, man. Not a fan. I don't hate it. I don't love it. But I dislike it more than I liked it. I'm kind of confused. I don't get who this movie is for. Like, is it more for adults? Is it more for kids? It just definitely doesn't seem like a kid movie. I probably would have been upset if I brought my kid to watch this. Okay. Well, the animal thing also affects adults more than kids.
But
like, I don't know. They just, it was dark, man. It was dark. It was weird. Like a lot of the characters were creepy looking and weird. Like I could see little kids being scared from them. It kind of reminded me of the movie The Fifth Element with these like weird aliens and like weird characters. It was like, it's kind of like, you know, freaky and out there. So that was more adult than anything. They also dropped an F-bomb, which I don't remember ever seeing in any of the other movies. Yeah, there was one F-bomb, and I was like, I like stopped, and I'm like, oh, wow, they really did that.
I have PG-13 movies, they get the one F-bomb.
They get the one F-bomb, yeah, but, you know, Disney doesn't usually. So, yeah, that was weird going into it. I didn't know the plot of it, obviously. But, yeah, it was dark, man. You could tell that that's what they were going for, the color correction, the lighting. It was all very dark and brownish and grayish. I don't know, man. Who asked for a Rocket backstory? Because I don't think anyone ever asked for that, but okay. Like, that sounds like something you could have montaged in, like, a quick 5 minutes during another movie, but they decided to just make a whole movie about it and make it more adult oriented and adult themed. I thought the animal cruelty thing was a cheap attempt at pulling at people's emotions.
Yeah, and they went in like pretty deep into that. It wasn't just like
it was too much, man. Like, yeah. I understand if they would have done a scene to like one scene showing that in the beginning, but it kept going throughout the movie. You know, like, it was too much. They overdid it, in my opinion.
They kept cutting back to it, and it was pretty cruel. Just watching that, not pleasant. And then juxtaposing it with like the Guardians' humor, you know, like the silliness.
Yeah.
It felt to me.
Yeah, it goes back to like, you know, we've had two great Guardians movies. You go into a Guardian movie, you know, that's what you expect. The humor, the fun. They're known for like the bright neon colors and space and all that. Like, this movie had none of that. It had some of the humor. It didn't have as much humor as the other movies.
But I didn't think it was as funny as
the humor it had, it wasn't funny enough to like, I don't know. Yeah, I also thought it ran too long. You could have done a third Guardians movie about so many different things, but like, you chose to make it about this. I don't get it.
Well, it's 2 hours and 29 minutes.
That's too long.
That's, it was too long. Long. That's long. Long. Would you say it's Ren? Would you say it's Ren and Stimpy gross?
No, because you don't have that level of magnification.
No. Ren and Stimpy is like comedy with like ooey gross stuff mixed in. This is like I said, it's like a cheap attempt at pulling at people's emotions. They're trying to turn a comedic, like upbeat, happy sort of property into, in one movie, they're trying to reverse all that and turn it into like a serious thing.
Well, it must have felt like the movie Inside Out. Yeah, and the animated film, which that was the whole thing, it was pulling your heartstrings and all over the top.
It just felt like parts of it were, I don't know if inappropriate is the right word, but it just didn't really vibe with me. I was just like, I don't know.
The best part out of the whole movie was this like fight sequence at the end where they did some crazy camera techniques. It was like all the Guardians were in a room, like a long corridor. They were fighting, they were getting through like this line of enemies, fighting like each line of enemies one by one. And the camera was just following them throughout the corridor. It was going around them 360 degrees. Everything was spatial from top to bottom. Like, and it was like all like just long takes. It was great. It was amazing. And then right after that amazing fight sequence, there was like a terrible cut. I don't know if anyone else caught it, but it was like a really, if you didn't catch it, you might have to go back to just that, just to see. It was just a really bad cut from like that to like the room they entered after they fought all those guys. It was weird. It was just weird.
I probably won't revisit it for the cut, but
no, I'm more upset than anything because I think Guardians was probably my favorite out of all the Marvel movies. And it's just like, all right, you've got it down to a great formula with those movies. Like, how do you get that wrong?
Yeah, I recommend you go watch Dungeons and Dragons. It's a good hang. It's funnier. Similar kind of humor, but it just feels fresh.
Yeah, I've been meaning to watch that. I think that's might be coming out or it is out already.
That actually, unfortunately, might be on Paramount Plus. This was James Gunn's last Marvel movie before he peaced out to take over DC. He did say that this was the final Guardians movie, but you know, none of these things are ever the final anything. Was there a post credit sequence? I don't think so, right?
There was. There was two. There was like a mid credit and a end credit, and those were pretty bad too. Like it was like a sort of like an outtake of them like in another world or something. It had nothing to do with like the following movies or like revealing or teasing something. But I remember they were forgettable. So I
let's move on to our main topic today. I did want to talk about Full Circle, but maybe we'll hold that conversation. I have notes. But since we're running out of time, let's jump ahead to our main topic today, which is telemarketers. Telemarketers is premiered on Max. This is an HBO production, I think. Yeah, it's an HBO original documentary. Premiered on Max Sunday night, this past Sunday. And basically follows like two telemarketing employees who start working at this company called CDG. And then they start filming like all of the shenanigans going on inside the company. And ultimately two of the guys decide that they're going to try to take the company down from the inside as they see the marketing scam that they're actually in being employed to execute, taking money from these people that they call. I think this was produced by, man, what's his name?
The guy. There were a ton of producers. The Safdie brothers were one of the set of producers on there, and you really see their style and influence.
Yeah, you see their style. And the other guy, I think, is the guy who plays Kenny Powers. What's his name? Nobody. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the name escapes me right now because I actually haven't watched any of his shows, Eastbound and Bound, any of those. I haven't watched any of those, but I know who you're talking about.
I think he's a producer too. And it has that flavor. All the footage is from, I think, early 2000s. Oh, Scott just posted it. Yeah, the Safdie brothers, Danny McBride, that's his name. So it does have some flavor to it, but I think a lot of that comes to the era that this was filmed in. I think we've been used to watching films or documentaries from 80s, maybe 90s and before. And this, I feel like it kind of like captures our generation in a bit. It's also in New Jersey. And, you know, we're all originally from New York. So there's that sort of familiarity there. So it did feel these characters felt very relatable to me from my era or the era just before. But yeah, you know, it's funny, like I try to look up reviews for the show. I couldn't find almost any content. There's no one really talking.
I mean, it's so new. It literally just came out. I saw it on Sunday when it premiered.
I saw it last night. Scott, did you watch it?
Yes, I did. There's quite a bit of articles about it. And what this is probably one of the few shows that are series that are on Max because it's premiering as part of it being on HBO. So when you have a streaming service, the average person doesn't understand why they have to wait until 10 p.m. for it to appear on the app, because that's when it airs on TV on HBO for those who actually have HBO.
It did premiere pretty late.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a typical Saturday Night Live.
It's a three-part documentary series, so maybe you'll hear more online about it after all three episodes come out.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I saw a lot of news articles because they did a lot of press, but no sort of reviews or people talking about or talking about their reaction. But it's gotten 100% audience score, 93 critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's been really well received. I think in part because of the main characters. Sam Lipman is mainly the guy with the camera, and then the other main character who's a total wacko, hilarious, smart guy is Pat Pespas, who, yo, this B-roll, all the footage is just out of this world, man. It's like these guys were in college just hanging out doing coke, smoking weed, having sex in the bathroom. This company employed pretty much like people who were underage and people with criminal histories because they did no background check whatsoever. They just wanted you to get on the phone and sell and make money. And they're really, really, really successful. But the Big Ed was on point just trolling everybody who was like a manager at the company. What like standout moments do you guys remember just from like the visuals or the sound bites, anything? This thing is crazy.
I don't remember her name, but that one woman that kept on interviewing that was like, she was screaming at the camera. I don't remember the lines, but a lot of the lines that you were saying were making you laugh. And they were just completely direct at what she would just say. Like, no one really give a, you know, flying. What was it? Everybody, it was like a circus. You know, the employee, the bosses didn't care what they do. As long as you came there and you were able to pick up the phone, that's all that mattered. It didn't mean you were high and all that stuff. It didn't matter. As long as you're able to pick up the phone and speak and read the script on the computer, that's all they care.
Yeah, they had the scripts on the computer, and then they had these sort of like tree dialogues where like, if a customer says this, say this. If the customer says this, respond by saying this. So they're pretty much automated. At that point, but when they introduce Pat, I think someone is filming him and he's like asleep on the call and he wakes up mid-call just to deliver the next line on the script to the customer. He's basically doing coke and heroin at work. One guy is like, yeah, someone was selling pit bulls out of this place.
That was crazy. Then they showed a picture of the little fish. Oh man, yeah, man. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Like the amount of footage that this guy got is incredible. It was like just watching this was like taking a trip in on a time machine back to like the mid-aughts, that like era of like, you know, a little past the early 2000s. People were wearing like do-rags and like long shirts, and like this hip hop culture was still around. Like even the white guys in there are all like, you know,
all thugs.
Oh man, yeah, and wow, just this is, I loved it, man. This is incredible. I mean, I'm a fan of the Safdie brothers' work, Uncut Gems and Good Time. I love those two movies, and this is just like, this just cements it and makes me like really. Like just a fan of their work, because it's all just like really gritty, grimy, like scumbag stuff. I honestly know you sent the trailer. I didn't watch it because I just went by the advice that you guys said that this is gonna be good. So
you didn't expect any of that.
I couldn't believe what I was watching. I knew it was real because I don't think HBO Documentaries messes around and makes mockumentaries. Like, they're pretty prestigious about their documentary division. I wanted to, in the back of my head, I wanted to think that this isn't real because there's so much footage of this stuff. And, like, the story just keeps getting crazier and crazier. And it's like, you know, ex-convicts, drugs, all this guy. Like, the guy that performed the best performed better when he was on heroin. you had to make $200 an hour at. Just the fact like that, you know, just the purpose of the business where you can call on behalf of an of a real organization and ask for donations on their behalf and only give them a partial, very small amount of what you're making and then keep the rest. Like, I didn't know that telemarketing companies, like, that's, they could do that, or that's part of telemarketing is you're basically marketing for other organizations on their behalf. So,
and in the second part, they were able to say that they were the cops themselves or the firefighters or the veterans or whoever they were pretending to be. They were saying
that's where the legal
percent.
That's where the legal woes and problems started coming in that we'll find out more about in the next episode. But like, I remember my parents, my dad specifically got by this scheme. I remember the fraternal order of the police calling my parents' house and my dad giving them money for like 2 years in a row. So this is real. This happened.
I remember I used to get the calls. I remember picking up the phone and I would get these calls. I was maybe I was much younger. I would get these calls and I would pick up the home phone. I'd be like 12 or 13 and be like, oh, can I get some print material to learn more about the organization? Like, oh yeah, sure, we'll send it to you. I go, okay, great, thanks. And I hang up the phone.
Yeah, everybody, bro, I think everybody got with this scheme at some point, or everyone's parents got at some point. And this was before cell phones blew up. So it was like calls to people's houses and stuff. So, you know, they'd pick up. But yeah, I remember my dad gave money 1 year and then they called back the next year and he got pissed off and he gave him money again. I don't know what happened after that, but yeah, because it sounds legit, you know, and then you get a decal in the mail to put on your car, you know, like you donated and you're friends with the police. The local
it makes you
police.
Feel good, yeah.
So
but they get you with the sob stories, right? They're like, oh, this, you know, this is going to go out and help the families of fallen police officers and things like that.
Or like it'll help us, you know, purchase new equipment because we're short on funding and all this stuff. But I didn't get what I loved it. Absolutely loved it 100%. I wish they would have gotten a little more. And of course, they may still do this. But in that first episode, I wish they would have talked a little more about the guys who started this. It just seems like they just brushed over it really quickly and named the two men that started this business. And I kind of wanted to know more about, or maybe I just didn't understand the part when they mentioned it, but like, is it that the police themselves can't ask for donations, so they hired telemarketing companies to do it on their behalf?
No, I think the scam is police can do their own donations, but these guys go, they approach the police and they say, what is your goal? For example, oh, you want to raise $350,000? We'll give you $350,000. Just give us the rights to ask for donations so that they make their money back. But it, you know, that's basically the scam. They get the rights. They get the
I understand that. I just wasn't 100% sure of it. If that meant that the police department themselves weren't allowed to ask for donations.
I think they are, because I think they actually do now. I get calls from police once in a while asking for money. I usually hang up. I don't know if they're legit or not, but I always hang up. I assume
it might still be the scheme, or maybe the scheme made it that it all got shut down and now they're actually asked.
I like when they show like the Spanish speaking side.
They were all standing up and like,
because the guy was like, yo, this is genius. They call these people who are, you know, they're more fearful of the police because they're not originally from here, so they use
tactics
and scare them into making money. And then they show like a whole department of Spanish speaking telemarketers.
He made a good point.
People, man.
There was this part that I loved that was when they went to PESPA's, they were like interviewing PESPA at his home. and his wife was in the back cooking hot dogs. She asked him how many hot dogs. He's like, all of them. Just throw all of them in there.
There's boiling hot dogs back there. Yeah.
My dad used to pick up the phone, and when they used to call, or they used to, of course, call, like, hi, would you like to donate? And then my dad would then pretend that he was calling them and say, would you like to donate? And he goes, I'm not asking to donate. I'm asking you for a thing. My dad goes, no, would you like to donate to the so-and-so organization? And the guy's like, no. I'm asking you. My dad would be like, no, I'm asking you. So pretty much the call ended with neither party getting a donation.
Yeah, whoever hangs up first wins.
That's smart. That's smart.
Yes.
That's smart. But they had a whole like sheet and guide on how to get around questions and people asking stuff.
But not that one. They didn't have that one taken care of.
They couldn't get around
the 10%. That was the golden rule. You couldn't say you were a cop, and if they asked you about the 10%, that only 10%.
You had to admit to those two things.
If you asked how much money gets contributed, you have to the organization, they had to admit it. But usually someone really wouldn't ask that.
I'm curious where the story is going to go, because we finished the show where Pat and Sam sort of, you know, they get kind of fed up with this company and they want to sort of, you know, get back, expose them, I guess. And I'm wondering, like, I still get telemarketing calls. I don't know about you guys, but I see calls on my iPhone all the time that say potential spam. I ignore them. So I'm wondering, like, where they actually go. Are they able to take anybody down? You brought up the two founders, owners. Like, do they face any responsibility ultimately? So it'd be cool if they brought those guys back in. I don't know.
You said one of the founders was, like, player for the Counting Crows, or like a 90s band? Isn't that what
played in a band with the guy from Counting Crows, or one of those bands?
Was that it?
Yeah, I don't
pardon
know
me if that's Crows. If that's not the band, but I just found that wild.
yeah I don't know if that's the band, but some band that I recognized from the 90s for sure. And they did get busted. Like, they lost the multiple houses and cars and everything that they had, but then I think they just popped up another company.
I like the cliffhanger it left you on at the end of the first episode. I'm interested to learn more and to see the outcome of all this. And, you know, the cliffhanger was, it wasn't very direct. It was kind of cloudy. So you don't know, like, okay, they're doing, you know, the two guys are trying to take this down from within. Now they're being followed. They don't know if it's the cops themselves that are going to be threatening them, or like just like hired thugs from the company owners. But the cliffhanger made it sound like it's actually going to be the cops themselves that are going to be like strong arming them to stop their investigation. Because I mean, the cops are getting money from this too. So 10% out of like, you know, 30 million or however make much.
Well, it's usually the unions or a non-private organization that represents the police. It's not really the police department that's asking for donations.
My mistake. You're right. Yeah. It's the fraternal order of police.
That's where it gets confusing, because when they call, hi, this is the so-and-so, you know, it's a organization that may not necessarily even represent the police themselves.
They got crazy with it. They started doing fire department, like, veterans, all sorts of stuff. Like,
and they would also be providing suggestive payment plan, like, this is what we recommend, but you also can give this amount as well. So they were guilting people. If they couldn't afford $95 or so, they would say, well, you can also make a donation of $35 as well, like that best fits your ability.
Yeah, they'd take anything. They would try to start you off with a large amount, then they'd talk you down, and until you're finally like, $30 is not an accurate.
And it was done by check. They would mail you something. They would mail out something, and the person would have to mail a check. There wasn't anything of going online.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that part.
I don't even think they were collecting credit cards. They weren't getting credit card numbers. It would then trigger something to be mailed, and the person would have to mail a check.
Interesting. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, because I remember at one point, then one of the organizations, the acronym for the name of the organization, spelled out cash, and the guys make out the check to CASH. And yeah. It's like, damn, they got him.
Yeah, like if you didn't know you were getting got, the fact that you're making out a check to cash is.
That was in, they also have that in the trailer as well.
It's such a.
For the series.
Such a scumbag move. But, and these guys were making millions on millions on millions. Maybe they still are. I don't know. But, man.
Did anyone else get the, or notice that? Like, there was the footage, all the footage we're seeing, it was touched up to like look more low res, right? Like, this guy was shooting on DV, and some of this stuff, some of the footage looked like VHS filters were thrown on it. I don't remember mini DVs looking that bad.
I don't think, well, in 2001, not everyone had a mini DV camcorder. They could have had, you know, high eight, but they didn't have mini DV was digital. We're getting tactical here. Mini DV was digital tape, so it didn't look like mini DV to me.
It may not have been mini DV. It might have been a more consumer friendly format for that time. But I still think they did add some VHS effects. I noticed mostly in the transitions and more of like the styled out sections.
Yeah. There was some that had like mini DV effects with the boxes, the digital blue. That looked pretty organic.
Okay, it's getting late. Let's leave it there. We come back in 2 weeks. We're gonna recap the series. Hopefully there's a happy ending to this and no one will ever get another telemarketer call again. But come back in 2 weeks. Like, subscribe. We'll see you later. Peace.